The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Games begin. Huh. Got our little headphones on. Oh, I do. Willis, what are you doing? He's got a good Pinocchio, imitation.
Oh, an imitation. Yes.
he was doing his best Pinocchio this morning. I forget what prompted that. At our house, it could be almost anything.
The Geico commercial?
I don't know. And he was also in Pinocchio, wasn't he in a... He was in a... Oh, he was in a play. We saw Shrek down there at Anderson High School. That was it.
Oh, how was that?
The revival of Pinocchio. It was great. They just did a great job.
I'm just a boy on radio.
Having all kinds of productions. The Wizard of Oz has been at the Cascade this weekend.
I know, and Stephanie that I work with, her daughter's in it, and I missed it, right? Is it over?
Not sure if there's another performance today or not.
Oh, today? You mean?
Like a matinee, maybe.
And then it's over?
Pretty sure it's over.
Dang it. That's too bad. All right. So, while we're trying to get our computers up and running, you are listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Because .com's taken by somebody who's not using it. How irritating is that?
I've noticed that.
Isn't that frustrating? Yeah.
We're going to get blackmailed for it here.
We have like .net, .org, .us, the whole shoot and match. We just don't have .com. And they're wasting.
And they haven't tried to extort money from you?
No. I've even written to them, you know, to start the extortion. Just to see how motivated they were.
Well, didn't it used to belong to another show of the same name in Arkansas or something like that?
I never met them. I don't know.
I think it did at one time.
Oh, well, they were before my time, maybe.
they're all just bitter now.
But what the heck?
Radio show, and they
unlike ours, most of those other shows never last.
Yeah, unlike ours. We've been doing this, how long have we been doing this?
It'll be going on 3 years this fall?
It's got to be longer than that. Didn't we start in 2010?
Well, then it'll be going on 4 years.
So it's going on four, yeah.
Because the radio station will be going on 5 years this December, that's right.
Well, how scary is that? Look at how old we're all getting. Yeah, doesn't take much for that, does it?
Radio stations will do that to you.
Make you old?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. It doesn't seem to take much, does it?
I'm not going to start looking like Johnny Fever, am I?
As long as you don't start looking like Nancy Pelosi.
That's you.
The scary facelift?
I got the booger button right here.
I like that. What is that? Oh, the thing that takes out 7 seconds and says something.
That was the booger button on WKRP.
Oh, is that what they called it?
Right.
Booger buttons. Nice.
Because Dr. Johnny Fever couldn't say booger on the radio.
That wasn't allowed?
He got in trouble for that.
Now we can say crap.
He got in trouble for a turkey promotion, too. Didn't he throw in turkeys out of a helicopter?
Which was based on a real-life event with a radio station. Yes, I'm afraid so.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
And they discovered turkeys don't fly.
Along with other things. Surprise! Oh, my gosh. So,
we got an exciting show today.
We do. And
we're going to really put our teeth into this one, huh?
Put our teeth in the meat. So we've got...
Raw meat for the listeners.
Exactly, some red meat.
Red meat.
Yeah, some nice red meat. So here momentarily, when Bob makes the phone call, we're going to have Ted Lyon on the phone with us. He is in Dallas, Texas. However, he is going to be in Yreka on the 24th of this month, which may or may not be near you. But he'll be at the... community theater there at 810 North Oregon Street. And that'll start at 7 o'clock. The topic, as you're like, well, why do we care who he is and where he's going to be? Because the topic is wolves. And I know we're like fixated on wolves. I'm sure the people who think they don't care about wolves are like, oh my God, are they talking about wolves again? Yes, we're talking about wolves again. Because you know what? There are tons of people who super don't get this.
And they're coming.
They just don't get it. They don't get what a big deal this is. This is a big deal. I don't care if you live in a city, an apartment building, a high rise. This is a big deal. It changes our landscape. It changed our landscape for our ancestors. That's why we eradicated them. Made perfect sense way back then. So, let's see. Ted and Will Graves have written a book called The Real Wolf, The Science, Politics, and Economics of Coexisting with Wolves in Modern Times. Because it's a, I mean, you have to remember, you have these agencies that micromanage this stuff. So it isn't just, oh, well, you know, if the wolves are eating all the cattle or whatever, then the ranchers can deal with it. If they eat your dog, you can do something about it. There are a lot of rules, a lot of hefty fines. And if you think the farther out you live, you know, the less government you have. You haven't talked to anybody who lives out of ways. So Ted's got 37 years experience representing clients in complex litigation. He's received verdicts, which were ranked in the top 10 in the nation on three occasions, been interviewed and featured by national and local media outlets, including Good Morning America, 60 Minutes, 60 Minutes 2. I guess there's a 2. I didn't know that. And Ted's on with us. So Some of the topics, I kind of like this. This is what I put on the flyer for the event. Ted Lyon, highly acclaimed attorney and author, will discuss his new book, The Real Wolf, The Science, Politics, and Economics of Coexisting with Wolves in Modern Time, and explore many myths about the wolf, including, do wolves attack or kill people? Because defenders of wildlife will tell you no. Do wolves affect ungulate herds? Those are deer and elk. They'll tell you no. Do wolves affect cattle, sheep, and other domestic herds? Oh, no, I'm sure they don't.
They don't eat beef.
No. Do wolves only kill the weak and the sick? I can't tell you how many meetings I've sat in where that is what they promote. That's like us going to the grocery store and only taking the brown produce. Do wolves destroy game herds? Do wolves generate economic growth for your community? That actually kind of makes me laugh. Do wolves carry diseases that are deadly to man and livestock? And that is a pivotal one that is being missed in every single one of these meetings. And the EPIC and Center for Biological Diversity and Defenders of Wildlife and those guys, they do not want this discussion of disease to come forward to the general public. So there we go. We have 7 possible topics. We only have 2 hours. Ted, where would you like to start? And hi, good morning.
Good morning to you. And it's a good morning here in Texas. It's raining, so we're happy.
Oh, yes, I bet you are. It was raining for us a bit ago, and yeah, we were happy too. we've got some of this on the website. Ooh, that made that kind of loud. We've got this on the website. We've also got links to the book. And so give us a clue. What's... you know, when you go to speak to groups, what's the one thing that you feel like you always take them off balance with?
Well, I think there are probably 2 or 3 things. There's not just one thing. Not very many people understand that wolves carry 50 diseases, and some of which are very deadly to livestock, to wild ungulate herds, and some of which can be contracted by man. And when that happens, it results in some very, very serious disease that's called hydatid disease. That's one of them. People really don't really understand that. I mean, the Center for Disease Control has put out papers, peer-reviewed scientific journals that show that hydatid disease worldwide cost is $750 million a year.
Now Ted, is that disease contracted primarily from wolves, or can you get it in other ways?
Well, any dog, any canid can carry it.
Okay.
It did not exist, though, in Montana or Idaho before wolves were introduced, and it's there now. Over 60% of the wolves in Oregon, Montana and Idaho that have been tested show positive for that disease. And that disease is a parasite that can get into your brain or into your lungs, and you don't even know you have it for 15 or 20 years until it becomes so big with a cyst that it really bothers you. And then if that cyst ruptures, it can kill you with anaphylactic shock. And it's a very bad disease. It's very hard to get rid of. And I've interviewed two people that have it in Idaho now, and I don't know how many other people, you know. And the doctors are just astounded because they haven't even seen those diseases.
No, probably in years.
These are third-world-type diseases that are here now.
My understanding is that the Center for Disease Control is not making this a reportable disease.
You know, I really don't. I think that's probably true, but I think that'll probably change in the future once there are more people that have it. It's a very serious disease, and the way people get it is it transmits itself from the wolf to the ungulate. The wolf will defecate in an area, and that wolf scat, so to speak, will have thousands and thousands of these parasites in it. And then an animal can, an ungulate can come along and eat some of the grass or whatever around there, and they can inhale it or eat some of it. And then that gets into that ungulate, and then it goes, and then it cycles back to other wolves. And then a dog, if a dog eats any of the entrails, or a dog can just sniff the scat of a wolf and get it, or you can actually, you know, your dog will be out in the woods and he'll roll in that kind of stuff sometimes, and you may not know it, and then you pet him and you can get it. That's how people get it. Little boys and little girls that are on farms are very susceptible to it. So it's a very serious issue. Another disease that the wolf carries that's very, very dangerous to cattle and is Neosporum caninum, and that causes abortions in cloven-hoofed animals. So cattle, sheep, other, you know, elk, caribou, they all end up with Neosporum caninum brought to you by the wolf.
Jeez.
Because wolves disperse so far. You had this OR7 that went into California, and he came from Oregon. But there was actually a wolf that was released in Yellowstone that was found in the Texas Panhandle. So they can go a long ways.
Yeah. How about these? I read a few of these hunting magazines, and oftentimes you'll see pictures of people that have killed a wolf, and they hold it up, and they're smiling next to their kill, and I mean they're all over this thing. That's probably not such a great idea.
Not at all. In fact, some of the people that some of the experts that have written chapters for my book are, you know, they cringe whenever they see that, because you can get it doing that.
Can you be tested for that? I mean, if you were around that and were concerned, is there a test to see if you have it?
Well, if you thought you had it, and you could have an MRI or a CT scan, that might be the only way. I'm not aware of any blood tests that you can be given that have that is definitive. There have been some tests that people are working on, but I don't know of one that's definitive at this time.
So bottom line is wolves are in and out of the property, especially if you live out in a rural area. You have dogs out there, so the family, you know, family's dogs are out running around. They run back onto the property. Whether they come in the house or not, it's another matter. But, you know, your kids are petting them, you pet them. That's all transmittable.
Yes.
Great.
It is.
And of the 50 different diseases that wolves carry, is the are the hydatid what are, is it called tumors or does it just create tumors?
Well, it's a cyst, and inside the cyst are millions of these little parasites.
Lovely.
And then if they if it ruptures, then they go throughout your whole system, and it's. You, I've actually seen MRI pictures of one of these cysts in a child's brain. It's a very deadly disease.
Wow. And the in the places where they're trying to introduce wolves, are they, do they ever, because we're not quite there yet in California, they keep saying that we're going to discuss the disease profile, although I'm not going to hold my breath for that. In other places, did that sneak up and surprise them, or did they already know that was a possibility?
Well, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, I interviewed Ed Bangs, who was involved and who was in charge of that for many, many years. He's retired now. And they knew about hydatid disease. They won those wolves twice, and they believed them to be parasite free. Now, how they got the disease, I don't know. But they're going to get it. I mean, it's just inevitable. When you have 60% of a population that has it, and they're so widely, wide ranging, so to speak, you know, they can go 20 miles in a day easily. So, you know, it's a serious issue, and I think people in California who are thinking about, you got to think about your livestock, your ranchers, people like that, because that's a huge issue for people that have cattle and have other livestock, sheep, things of that nature. And it's not just the wolf coming in killing them. It's the wolf exposing them to these diseases that then cause their cattle to abort, become unproductive, or the diseases that can get to man.
Sure.
Has there been any research on the actual numbers of cases in areas where wolves have been introduced? Is it something that's been...
No, there has not been.
Okay.
As Aaron said earlier, as far as I know, CDC is not requiring this disease to be reportable in those areas. However, most doctors are not even aware of it. And this one lady who had it and had a surgery to remove the cyst from her liver had to go to, I believe, Washington State to a specialist there. And the doctor was astounded that she had it because he said, you just don't see that in the United States.
And where did she
live? It does exist in other parts of the world. And it has been a huge problem in the Soviet Union, where there are a lot of wolves, and in Australia, where dingoes carry the disease.
Right. Now, where did this lady live?
She lived in the mountains of Idaho. I can't really tell you the town.
Okay. So we know it's in Idaho, then.
Interesting.
Oh, of course it is. Yes.
Okay.
And is that, I haven't done any research on the other states and their, I'm going to say their fake little wolf management plans, because frankly, I think that they work on this and then magically you have wolves and it's an emergency and then they pull out the plan they really wanted because the other guys were too slow. Was this part of anybody's plan? I mean, did they actually make provisions for this at the beginning?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the top, I gave a talk in Bozeman about a month ago about the book. And it was a very well attended, but there was a gentleman who had worked on the wolf issue for the Yellowstone National Park. And he was retired, and he was very much pro-wolf. And he really tried to ask me a lot of questions about this issue. And then after it was over, he came up and said, you know, they told us that, he said, I can't believe that it's costing $750 million a year. I said, well, just look at my book. And that CDC report, I think, is referenced in the book. I know it's referenced in the book. And I think it actually is printed off on the back. I'm not 100% certain, but you can find it by
those darn editors. You never know what they're doing.
He was in denial. He really was. He could not believe it. And he said, they told us about this disease, but I can't believe, you know, and I didn't even wear gloves and blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, a lot of people are so blinded by their love of the wolf. They have a very, it's hard to tell them the truth. But the numbers don't lie, and that's what I keep telling people. People tend to misstate certain facts. They exaggerate them or whatever, but if you look at the numbers about what happens to caribou herds and what happens to elk herds and when wolves come in and what happens to cattle, I mean, they're all in this book, and it's devastating.
Well, that's, you know, people think, well, I think we've got a couple myths. Okay, they don't carry disease. That's a huge one. That's the big, as they say, elephant in the room. And then another one is that all the cattle ranchers, they get reimbursed, so what's the big deal?
Yeah, but that's another fallacy.
Yeah, that's it's a
gigantic. Studies that have been done show that 1 out of 8 cattle that are killed are actually found. And then the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates that in every 5 years they do a survey on how many cattle are killed by various different predators. And in 2010 was the last one, and it showed that there were 8,000 cattle killed in the United States. You'll never hear that figure from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They always say it's a couple of hundred or something like that. The numbers are diametrically opposed, and the USDA has no, they don't care about wolves at all. Their economists are doing statistical surveys that are peer-reviewed. So it's not like they have an agenda. However, some people with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service have an agenda, and that agenda is to move wolves all around the United States. And that, not all of them, but some of them do have that agenda. They think it's a good thing. I don't agree with them.
Yeah, and I could hear people out there, you know, shaking their fists at their radio. It's like, they just want us off our rural land. It's like, we know. We'll probably get to that part. Hey, we've got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with Ted Lyon, the author of The Real Wolf. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM. Join us online in the chat, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Going to house more. Oh, no, he's not. Never mind. No. It's the singing part.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, that's my favorite wolf song.
I didn't want you to cheat us out of any howling.
That's right.
We were busy watching, looking at the teeth. Well, they're teeth pictures, but I guess they're tooth pictures. In Range Magazine, Ted's book was featured.
Yeah, on the in the winter 2013-2014 issue of Range Magazine. And by the way, if you're not getting Range Magazine,
You're blowing it.
I mean, it's got some great articles in it, and they're all written by people that give you the facts. They're not opinions. They're facts, and you can show this to anybody and have a conversation about it. But in that article, Ted, you talked a little bit about the fiscal impact of a couple of ranches that had losses due to wolves, and you had some pre-wolf numbers, and then numbers after the wolves were introduced and compensation. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. One of the chapters in the book is written by a lady by the name of Heather Thomas, and she is a Western and outdoor writer, and she's written for a lot of different magazines. But she wrote a chapter where she detailed in there the testing that was done in Oregon pre-wolf arrival, and then after the wolf came. They did also the same kind of work in Idaho, but unfortunately they didn't do it pre-wolf. But the difference in weight gain for cattle is dramatic. And they collared a wolf, they collared several wolves, and then they would map them on where they were approaching the cattle. And it was amazing how often they would harass these cattle, 700 times in 1 month. Yeah, 700 times in 1 month.
So they didn't just run in and eat them. I mean, they run in, run out.
Stalk them constantly.
Yeah, they'll do that. And then, you know, the cattle are always on the lookout for the wolf. I mean, and they also have recently done some studies where they measure the blood. And cattle that have been exposed to wolves will produce cortisol, which is a stress enzyme that a cow produces, and that then can result in them not getting pregnant. So it's not, and the same thing with elk and deer. I mean, when they're harassed by these wolves, the elk in around Yellowstone actually are starving to death in the wintertime because they can't get in these open areas where there's a lot more foliage for them to eat because they're afraid of being exposed to wolves. It's amazing. Very, very, very sad. And the cattle number, you know, they did some studies on calves when they would come out in the spring and they weighed them and they were losing about 100 pounds. They lost 100 pounds of weight compared to what they would have been had they not been exposed to wolves per calf. So that's a lot of money to a rancher.
Well, and also
in New Mexico, there are ranches that actually had to go out of business and sell their cattle operation because they couldn't economically handle the wolf.
Well, that's what I was really surprised at was the number of losses. In this article, you mentioned one of these ranches had a pre-wolf annual loss of about $24,000 in losses on the cattle. And in the following 2 years, that number had soared to over $120,000 in losses in just 2 years. I don't see how anybody can absorb those kind of losses.
Well, they can't, and unless you have a really huge ranch, and you have, as one friend of mine told me one time, the best sire bull is a producing oil well. So, if you have oil, then you can do it. But otherwise, if you're in the cattle business, you can't do it.
No. And there was another ranch here that you featured, and it was pretty much the same thing. I mean, it the losses were staggering, and the defenders of wildlife compensation.
I love that.
I just, you know, the argument that these people give us that, you know, these guys are getting reimbursed for their losses is total bunk. I mean, one of these ranches got $600 in reimbursement, and the other one got $1,500.
And they lost how many animals?
Oh, that was over $120,000 in losses in
here's cattle. Your $600.
Yeah, here's $600. That should make it
you
okay.
you welfare rancher, you taking all that free money.
You can handle the rest.
Well, that's a joke. Yeah, that is truly a joke.
It really is.
And then all the other things that they say, this flaggery where they drape flags on fences and they talk about having range riders and all that stuff.
Oh, dear God. Yes, I've had to listen to that in these stupid meetings.
It doesn't work, and it consistently doesn't work, and it's been proven to not work.
You're supposed to throw rag cans, some kind of Anyway, and if you, but if you throw rocks at him or you yell at him, you have to be, you know, we need restriction on how you can yell at them, because if you, honest to God, verbatim, if you cause them to burn calories running away from you, you have harmed them. That's considered harm.
Yeah, you've stressed them.
Yeah, if they burn calories.
Yeah. Well, that shows a lack of understanding.
Yes, it shows a lack of a lot of things, doesn't it?
And an abundance of others.
Intelligence was high on my list right there. Well, so for, you know, for people who think that that, oh well, you know, they'll make rules about this sort of thing, you have to understand you're dealing with absolute crazy people when you're setting up the rules.
Well, and what's sad is, you know, places like Oregon and some of the other places that have them now in Washington State. I mean, these poor ranchers are just. But what they did is they came in and passed the laws before anybody really understood what was going to happen. They had a wolf plan, and they would come in and then, you know, how many breeding pairs are you going to have? The same people that did it in Montana went to those other states and helped them draft the laws. And the bottom line is there's going to be way too many wolves in those states before they're able to control them.
They actually sat in a meeting, I'm going to say 3 weeks ago, and the thing about, they only want to look at Oregon and Washington. They don't want to look at Idaho, Wyoming, Montana. They don't want to look at those states because obviously now Idaho's, you know, kicked up their hunting season. So, you know, we don't want to look at that. We just want to look at Oregon and Washington. But this one gal, the Defender of Wildlife gal, blurted out, well, Oregon can handle 1,400 wolves. And then all the environmental people looked at her like, are you kidding me?
Well, that's
their deep, dark secret.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, people don't really understand is how do you count wolves in mountains? I mean, it's very difficult. I mean, Montana just released their estimated number of wolves, 625, which is, or 627, I think, just Friday. But they don't really know that. I mean, if you talk to people that are involved, that's a guesstimate. They know that's a minimum number that they have. I talked to David Mack, who's one of the premier wolf biologists in the country, and I asked him, I said, how in the world do you count wolves? He said, it's really hard. It's almost impossible in places like that have mountains. I mean, and you're not going to fly a grid over every mountain in the Rocky Mountains. I mean, it's very difficult to count wolves.
So they completely overpopulate. At the end of the day, you have way more numbers. Well, and then, of course, what they're finding in Oregon, at least that's what we heard from John Williams up there, that when they start talking about breeding pairs, well, then it's, you know, did they see them together, and how many pups did they have, and were they all at around a campfire at the same time? And I mean, you have all these crazy restrictions. Oh well, that one doesn't count. Oh, that doesn't count either.
Yeah, that's another thing. The methodology where they talk about breeding pairs. That's 10 breeding pairs or something like that. I mean, that equates to a lot more than 20 wolves. So it's just. It's really, really a false methodology, in my opinion.
So, if you, okay, so the book is, just for people who just might have tuned in, we're talking about a book by the title of The Real Wolf, right? The Science, right. Politics, and Economics of Coexisting with Wolves in Modern Times. So, if you were going to boil it all down to a shot and give it to us as an inoculation, what is the upshot of dealing with coexisting with wolves in modern times? Do we do it? Do we not do it?
Well, it's going to be done because there's no way to to take them out of the landscape. I was with one of the premier wolf biologists in Montana 3 weeks ago, and he was very matter-of-factly said, they're going to have wolves. They're going to disperse. There's no other way. So what you have to do, in my opinion, is you don't want to make them into a game animal. You want to keep them as a predator so that ranchers and people like that can manage them. And, you know, and that's about all you can do. I don't think anybody would tolerate poisoning them. That's how they were wiped out, basically, in the 1920s. And most of those poisons are banned now. So,
of course they are.
But the only way for ranchers and livestock people and things of that nature is to have the ability to have them hunted if they get on their property. That's about the only way.
Ted, I had a conversation with a gentleman who lives down in Southern California, and one of the problems we have in Northern California is we're not really fairly represented in Sacramento. The number of legislators that come from the big cities far outnumber what we have here. And something came up about the wolves, and I was trying to educate him a little bit about the dangers of having wolves and the damage they've done in Yellowstone. And I was just throwing some facts out there. And he was absolutely unaware and did not believe anything I was telling him, because he believed that, you know, it's a big world out there, and there's plenty of room for wolves, and you know, when if they eat the deer and the elk, then, you know, the deer and the elk will go away, and the wolves will go where there's food. They won't stick around. So, you know, if you don't have these animals basically living in your backyard, the wolves, you're never going to see them. So, you know, what's the big deal? And I told him, I said, you know, when the elk and the deer and the game animals are gone, they're not going to go away. They're going to go for the next easiest prey animal, which is going to be your dogs, your cats, and, you know, possibly your kids. And he said, oh, that's never going to happen. You know, that's just a lot of hype, blah, blah. Well, as luck would have it, a couple of weeks or maybe even a week later, there was a video on YouTube of a wolf that came into a gentleman's yard. He had three dogs, and these were dogs that were about the size of a Labrador Retriever, three of them. And this wolf trotted down into the yard, grabbed one of these dogs while the other two were barking and really raised a lot of ruckus trying to scare him off. But they didn't go near him, and that wolf looked at those dogs, and they backed off. And he held the one dog down by the neck, held him on the ground until he quit struggling, and then picked him up and hauled him back up into the woods. And they said they never saw the dog again. So they will come into your yard. And, in fact, they interviewed the owner, and he said, we don't let our kids play in the yard anymore. I mean, we can't, we don't know when these wolves are going to come in. And if the dogs aren't there, then they will grab a kid. So I think people really need to be aware of the dangers, even in urban America.
Well, they eventually will go. I mean, let's face it, the, you know, Yogi Bear, I mean, that cartoon was based part in, you know, in fact, let's face it, the picnic baskets were easier to get.
Yeah.
It's easier than running around in the woods. On that happy note, we do have to take a really quick break here. We'll be right back with Ted Lyon, author of The Real Wolf. Talking about wolves this morning, people. Put your chomping hats on and join us. We're in the chat room, wethepeopleradio.us. Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully.
They'll get their own disease.
Small numbers.
They'll get their own disease and eradicate themselves. That'd be
absolutely
awesome. Why doesn't that ever happen?
I don't know. Welcome back, everybody. We are with talking with Ted Lyon, author of The Real Wolf, and
the one with the pointy teeth, not the one with his lips closed and with the happy fuzzy face.
The meat eater, not the little cuddly cute puppies that you often see pictures of. Ted, talk to us about the dangers of wolves actually coming into town and eating your dogs and cats. And I mean, is it really possible? Will they do that?
It happens all the time. If you just follow the media like I do on wolves, they're on a fairly regular basis. They are taking dogs and killing them, hunting dogs. There are many instances where people who have hounds who've been out either hunting rabbits or cat hunters in Idaho or Montana, they end up having all their dogs killed. And when a pack of wolves comes after dogs, they're gone.
That's the end of that.
Tear them apart.
Yeah, really. You were talking earlier about a 75-pound Labrador retriever. I mean, it's nothing for a huge, these wolves are big. I mean, the biggest one that they weighed in Yellowstone weighed 148 pounds. And that's, twice the size of an average male lab. And, they can just pick the dog up and carry it. And there is a video that if you look on the internet, you can see of a wolf carrying a fairly large dog out of an Indian village up in Alaska with other dogs trying to stop it. I mean, they're very dangerous animals. People that I know that live in Montana or Idaho where wolves are, they don't go walking in the woods anymore without carrying a gun. It's not smart to. And wolves kill people on a fairly regular basis around the world, and that's another myth that has been perpetuated by the people like the Defenders of Wildlife and people like that. Forever, they said wolves don't attack people. Well, they have killed 3 people in North America in recent years that we know of. And
they have no fear. They're not. There's really no predator. They're not afraid of anything.
They really are. They're so fast. I mean, they give a big bear a wide berth. But I mean, they can. They have actually, taken on grizzly bears and run them off of kills. I mean, an outfitter in Canada told me that they believed that they were getting in the dens of black bears during the wintertime and killing them when they, So there's nothing that can, there's nothing as fast as they are. They're incredible animals, incredible.
Well, when you started this, actually, just out of curiosity, why did you start this project?
Well,
it seems kind of out of your wheelhouse a little bit.
Well, it really isn't. I spent 14 years in the Texas legislature, and I was on the Natural Resources Committee in the Senate and in the House both, which deal with all these wildlife issues. I've always loved fishing and hunting and the outdoors, and I have a lot of bird dogs, and I love to hunt birds, and I've been very involved with wildlife conservation issues. In fact, I was one of the sponsors of a bill that banned redfish netting on the Texas coast, which has subsequently gone all over the whole Gulf of Mexico. And red fishing has really increased dramatically since then. So I've always been a conservationist. And in 2007, I was in Montana, in Choteau, Montana, with a bunch of friends of mine, and we were from Montana, and we were bird hunting. It was opening weekend of pheasant season, and after we got our limits that day, we went and cooked some steaks out around an open fire, and these guys were talking about how bad the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was and how they had introduced these wolves and, 66 wolves into Yellowstone and into the Frank Church Wilderness area of Idaho and how they were killing all the elk. I just couldn't believe it. And I started trying to defend the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service because I'd worked with people who were biologists with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on issues affecting duck hunting and things of that nature, and I worked with a biologist at Texas Parks and Wildlife for years and years and years, and we really did a lot of good things to protect wildlife. I couldn't believe that they were they could have been that wrong. It just didn't make sense to me. And they jumped on me that night, all these guys did, like a pack of wolves. I defended myself as best I could, and I am a trial lawyer, and so when I get involved in a case, I have to become an expert on that issue, whatever the issue is. I try a lot of really big, complex cases. And so that's just been my nature. I've been doing it for 38 years, and I read everything I can about the issue. So I went back to Texas after that evening.
Did I prove them wrong, huh?
Yeah, I was going to prove them wrong. And so I researched it for a couple of years, and each year we always go up there opening weekend of pheasant season. We've been doing it for 11 years now. And so in 2009, Montana published a report, and you couldn't really find the truth about what was happening to the elk and Yellowstone. You just couldn't find it.
Hey, Ted, before you go into the story, because this sounds like a great story.
We don't want to cheat this one.
No, I want to hear this thing, and I don't want to rush you. We're running out of time. We're going to take a hard break here at 9 o'clock. And when we come back, give us a gruesome details of what you found out on this.
You are listening to We the People Radio. We're going to be here with Ted Lyon talking about wolves for another hour. Yay! And you can join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah, and welcome back, everybody.
You're listening to We the People Radio. This is Hour 2. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. If you'd like to call us, I suppose we ought to give you the phone number. It's 530-605-4567. And don't call us 2 minutes before the hour. We're going to pretend you're not calling. Although someone did call us on the break, right?
Yes, a listener who couldn't stay on, Gary from Reading.
Nice.
I believe. And he, the essence of his question was, anybody who's been a victim or had a loved one that was a victim of a wolf attack on federal land, did they ever get names and sue any of the individuals involved directly, the forest rangers, the Forest Service, that type of thing?
I do not know. Ted? We have Ted Lyon on with us, by the way, the author of The Real Wolf, in case you weren't here in the first hour. So we're going to continue to talk about wolves, and if you missed the first half, you can go to the website and catch up on it after the fact. But, Ted, do you have any info on that?
Okay, Ted didn't hear any of that. My bad.
He didn't hear any of that. Our bad. Okay, so any of the one of the people who called during the break wanted to know if any of the people who'd been injured or relatives of people who'd been injured by wolves, did any of them file any suits? Did any of them do anything about that?
No, there's no way you could. The federal government is basically immune from any type of lawsuit on that. I don't think you could, and the state is too. I don't think they would. I don't think you would be successful at all.
Nice.
Unless Congress passed a bill allowing it. But that probably won't happen either.
Probably not, because that would be a useful bill. And actually, for the folks out there that are thinking that this isn't the federal government, this is state fish and game, or fish and wildlife, whatever they're going by these days, just so you understand, the California Wolf Plan, $400,000, $300,000 of it coming from the federal government. So the federal government is piggy banking it, and the state is creating, got a three prong approach out here, actually. We've got the feds talking about delisting. So that's one whole process of its own that'll probably take an eon. Another process is the Fish and Game Commission, and the commission is making a decision. I believe it's on the 16th of this month. I don't have my calendar in front of me, but the 16th seems right, to make a decision. And, you know, they're going to make that decision in Ventura, because that's super close to where all the wolves will be if you want to drive another 12 hours. So in Ventura, they're going to make this decision on whether or not to list the wolf under the California Endangered Species Act. Then the third leg of the stool is the employees of Fish and Game, in addition to stakeholders like Farm Bureau, cattlemen, houndsmen, wool growers, and all the ungulate guys. So you have Rocky Mountain Elk, you have the Deer Foundations, you have all those guys, along with Defenders of Wildlife, Epic, and all the Enviro nuts. And so they're coming up with a wolf management plan. And I got to tell you, I've been sitting in on those. Woo! Like watching paint dry. So there's three kind of parts of this, and a lot of it being funded by the feds.
Well, that brings up another topic. We were talking about how I got into it, and if you want to continue on with
yes,
that,
please.
Or I can talk about the money aspect of this, if you want to.
No, I want to hear the rest of your story about the campfire crew that you were going to prove wrong.
Yeah, because Bill's got a campfire crew of his own, so he's picking, he's taking notes.
Well, so I went back to Texas, as I said, and then in 2009. Montana Fish and Wildlife two biologists wrote a report called the Wolf Ungulate Final Report, and it's 64 pages long, and it was written by two biologists by the name of Jim Hamlin and Julie Cunningham, and they detailed in that report just through facts and figures what was really shocking to me, and that was that the elk herd and the northern Yellowstone elk herd had dropped from 19,000 elk in 1995 when wolves were first introduced to 6,000 in 2010. And so, or 2009. That was shocking. And the moose, if you read the report very carefully, the moose population had dropped dramatically. Today, that same elk herd, it drops about 6 to 10% every year. It's down in around 3,000, a little over 3,000 now. The moose are gone from Yellowstone. They're just gone. There are hardly any moose left in Yellowstone, if any. Wolves kill moose very easily. And so after I read that, I became very, very convinced that this was horrible. I have a place 45 miles north of Yellowstone. I started researching a lot of the other herds. They were disappearing rapidly. Some of them were totally gone in other parts of Montana. And then I researched the law. The Endangered Species Act is what enabled them to introduce those wolves into Yellowstone and what they call a non-essential experimental population. Started researching the numbers, and I was wrong, and those guys that were saying that, all my campfire buddies were right. So after I researched quite extensively, I had two law students spend a whole 6 months doing this. We'd have a meeting every day, and I'd give them a task. Well, what about this issue? What about that issue? I thought maybe the government lawyers were just bad. Well, that's not true. The law is so bad that you couldn't change the law, that you couldn't do anything in the courtroom. The federal judge, who basically was the wolf judge in Missoula, Montana, was extremely pro-wolf. And so we just went to Congress and changed the law for the first time in the endangered species had ever been changed. I got a bunch of different people together from all over the West, and we got an amendment in 2011 put on a rider. We put a rider on a budget bill, and President Obama signed it into law, and we had to get the Democrats and Republicans both working on it, and Senator Harry Reid was extremely influential in it, and so was Senator John Tester, and there were a lot of Republican senators that worked on this too, Orrin Hatch and Mike Enzi, and the two senators from Idaho were very instrumental. We had senators from Arkansas, Mark Pryor. I mean, we had a bipartisan group work on it. And that brings me to another matter that I will say to you. You said something about, you know, the people from Sacramento who represent big cities don't understand this issue. Well, they don't, but I promise you, if you go into those offices and you give them the facts and figures, they'll be shocked. I mean, people are shocked by this, how devastating these animals are to their livestock industry. And you have a billion-dollar agricultural industry there in California, and a lot of that are people that produce beef and people that have cattle that produce milk, wool. It's devastating to those kind of industries.
Yeah, but Ted, I think the thing you're missing there is, you know, we can import all of that. We really don't need these people to produce food and wool and beef, and because, you know, we have offshore and South American neighbors that can do a much better job.
That's why we're cutting off all the water to, all our nut growers and all that in the Central Valley.
Yeah, Sacramento truly does not care about the devastation that's going to occur with wolves.
It's hard to care, though, when you're busy running arms and hanging out with Shrimp Boy. Sorry, somebody had to bring that up.
Yeah, no, our situation is unlike, I think, a lot of places. We've got so much
we've entered
environmental corruption in this state. It's overwhelming.
I know, and I understand that, but I promise you that there are good people that actually do care about the public good. And my experience, nobody had ever amended the Endangered Species Act in its 38-year history except for a technical amendment, or 37-year history. And when we went to Congress, just a bunch of people that aren't professional lobbyists, the first meeting I was at were a bunch of professional lobbyists who told us we were crazy. You can't do this. It's you can't get the Democrats in Congress to go for this. You can't get, there were certain Republicans that were against it, too. But, you know, when you laid out the facts, we had 60 co-sponsors of a bill within about 2 or 3 months.
That's pretty good.
One thing I think is important, if your legislators could get the facts, if they could get some groups that bought whole 200 of my books, and they're giving them to the members of their state house and senate and to the governor and people like that because they think it's really important. See, this issue doesn't just affect California or Montana, Idaho. It affects the Carolinas. They have they have wolves there that aren't wolves. They're coyote wolf mix. And it affects New Mexico. It affects the north, east. They have coy wolves going into Illinois and places, in New York. It's a big issue, and it's going to get even bigger.
Well, and for people who think that, well, it's not a big issue for them geographically, surprise, if you eat meat, if you're counting on dairy, this is the wolves' food. You can't all have the same food at the same time and everybody makes out. That's kind of not the way that works. We need to take a really quick break because we're kind of back on schedule here. Try to take breaks at the quarter hour in our perfect world. So we're going to come back with Ted Lyon. We're talking about the real wolf. And his book has a ton of information. This is not an editorial type of book. We'll be right back with you.
So many lies twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's the same. Who cares for free?
back, everybody. Let's throw another Wolf tune in there. Although wolves don't just kill because they're hungry. They kill because they...
sport.
They just like to go out and have a little fun.
Kill to teach their young. They kill for sport.
Hey, Ted, you made a comment earlier about a coyote-wolf mix. I wasn't aware that they would interbreed. And if they do, what do you end up with? I mean, do you end up with an aggressive coyote or a...
a large beast that bites.
A large wolf that likes mice.
No. You end up with a what they call a coy wolf, and they weigh somewhere around 80 pounds or so, and they're they've been well documented, and they're very dangerous and very aggressive and extremely smart, and they have them in a lot of places now.
So it just takes our, you know, takes some of our predators that we normally have, like coyotes, and then...
makes them bigger.
Just makes them bigger and scarier.
Yes.
Gosh, yeah. That's awesome.
In fact, there was a singer, a young singer, a female singer, that was hiking in one of the parks in Canada that was killed by a pack of coy wolves.
Wow.
So they're dangerous.
Didn't hear about that.
Yeah, we have an abundance of coyotes, and that surprises me, because when OR7 came down here, they said he went back because he couldn't find anybody to, you know,
hang out with
and have coitus.
Well, there's been plenty of interbreeding between wolves and coyotes and wolves and dogs. I mean, it's not unusual to have a wolf that will breed a female dog.
Well, I don't imagine a coyote or a dog's going to say no to a wolf.
Yeah, on any level for any reason. Well, so Ted, I mean, okay, with this wolf, you know, this magic wolf thing sweeping the country, is there any shot at rolling this back?
Absolutely, I think there is. I think people need to, in the final chapter of my book, I talk about what needs to be done with the Endangered Species Act, so that states have, we make specific recommendations in there, so the Endangered Species Act can't be used like it is now. It's becoming a litigation cash cow for groups that want to support their, what I would call, a severe environmental agenda. And I think you've seen some of that in California. It's happened all along the West Coast with the spotted owl and things of that nature.
And the stupid fish.
Yes, exactly. And the act needs to be changed so that states are equal partners with the federal government. That's best way to change it. And then there are some other specific recommendations in there. And then I think in regard to the wolf issue, I think probably Congress needs to act and take them off. The original bill that we filed would have removed them completely from delisting, and that's what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife wants to do now. They've tried to do it, and again, you get these groups that have, you know, they have nothing more than lawyers who litigate this issue all the time. And it really does cost the federal government a tremendous amount of money, and it costs them a tremendous amount of time. Their budget is eaten up with litigation when it should be used to try and save endangered species. So you cannot manage, you just can't manage any animal in the courtroom. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, it just doesn't work. I mean, as I told you earlier, I'm a lawyer, and God bless lawyers, but they, you know, they don't manage wildlife very well. Well, judges and lawyers don't.
Well, these animals breed a lot. I mean, I don't really understand how they get to maintain that they're endangered.
Well, they're not endangered at all. That's the fallacy. There are over 60,000 wolves in Canada. There's several thousand in Alaska. There's thousands up in Minnesota, Wisconsin. There's probably at least 2,000 in Montana and Idaho, Wyoming. I mean, they're not endangered at all. And to claim that they are is ridiculous. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, we want to bring it back to the natural balance of nature. Well, that doesn't really exist. And the fact of the matter is we have 300 million people that live in North in the United States now. And that's a lot of displacement of rural land. At one time, maybe there was a natural balance, but you can't do it anymore. I mean, the moose is an example. The moose are gone from Yellowstone. They've had to shut down the season in Wyoming because they have suffered such a dramatic decline in moose there. Minnesota has shut their season down because of wolf predation. Same thing in Wisconsin. And a lot of these folks want to say, well, that's because of global warming. Well,
don't get us started on that.
Well, I believe that global warming has an effect on the earth, but in terms of the decimation of moose, it doesn't add up, and here's why. Utah has no wolves. They do not want any wolves there. They have a very aggressive predator program. The moose population in Utah is thriving. It's doing extremely well. Whereas, you know, and they're hotter than Montana or Idaho. So, it's, you know, the wolf is the culprit.
Yeah, no kidding.
When you say, Ted, when you say the U.S. Forest Service or Fish and Wildlife, wants to delist or is thinking about delisting the wolf, is that nationwide or does that happen on a state-by-state basis?
No, it's a nationwide delisting except for right there in that area of Montana and Idaho, which got it that where we passed the bill that says that if they have so many wolves after 5 years, they don't ever have to go back to being listed. But they want to delist them everywhere, and here's why. Because they know that they're not endangered. That's number one. Number two, there's been nothing that has cost U.S. Fish and Wildlife people less lack of respect, so to speak, from the people that they deal with in this wolf issue. One of the top people in the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service told me that. Nothing has caused them more problems than this issue of wolves. They get hell from both sides, from the hunters and sportsmen and ranchers, and then they get hell from the ultra-environmental type groups. So they can't make anybody happy, and they don't want to be managing them. They shouldn't be. They're not endangered. Under any shape, form, or fashion, they are not endangered.
So if they were to delist them, could a state like California, who seems to make their own way.
Reality?
And could they turn around and say, well, in California, we're going to list them?
That's what they're trying to do. This is exactly what's happening.
That's exactly. Yes, you can do that. They could do that. And that's why this issue of the facts need to get out to your legislators or at least your fish and game commissioner, whoever makes the decision there, because they don't know what they're dealing with. They really don't. I don't think they have any idea about these diseases, about all the livestock losses they're going to suffer. The spread of Neosporin caninum through your dairy herds, which will cause tremendous loss and abortions and things of that nature. It's not a good thing from an economic standpoint at all.
Well, I think they have a clue because the Fish and Game director here in California has, I don't know, it's been public. I mean, I heard him say it, but I know he's written about it, and he has recommended to the commission that they not list them at the state level. So,
you need to have all your folks that are in the agricultural industry go talk to those commissioners wherever they are, because it's you know, if they get the facts, generally people try, you know, who are on those commissions, they, whatever their background is, they try to do the right thing. I really believe that. But they just don't have the facts. The fact about, that's why I wrote the book, because the issue of the wolf has been so misrepresented. The truth has not been out about it. And everybody thinks that they're just warm, cuddly, wonderful animals that have families and everything. And the fact of the matter is, they're incredible animals, but they are very, very devastating to other wildlife and to livestock.
Well, the killer is that, well, they think that they're out. This is the part that just gets me, is that people think that they're way out in the middle of nowhere, that they're never going to see them, that no humans will ever interact with them because they're never going to come in where people are. Well, I mean, again, I guess, you know, it's a sorry example, but I go back to, you know, Yogi and Boo Boo. I mean, they went in for the picnic baskets because they were easy. So why would you not go where all the cattle are? Right there. They're just right there, yeah, waiting.
There are cities in Canada that have coy wolves living inside the city limits. They actually believe that there'll be wolves soon in New York City, and coy wolves. I mean, they're very adaptable animals.
Sure.
And they're going to go where the easiest food source is.
Exactly. Why would they stay out there in the middle of nowhere and run 20 miles to go catch something? That makes no sense. It's just stupid on the face of it. It irritates me when I have to hear him say that. I've been very nice so far, but I think I'm going to have to get some kind of a sign, like, you know, when you're an auctioneer, I'm going to have to have, like, my BS paddle, I'm going to have to hold up. It's like, sorry, yep, failed that one.
Well, don't think either that the money that the environmental groups are throwing at our legislatures to make these things happen doesn't have an effect or an impact on their decision to allow this. I mean, that's part of the problem.
Let's face it, in California, we're not exactly infamous for our factual decisions.
No.
that isn't exactly what we're known for. Hey, we have to take another quick break. Darn it. We're going to come right back. We're chatting with Ted Lyon, author of The Real Wolf. And? Oh, what's that sign, Bob? I don't know that sign. Was that the keep talking sign? Oh, I didn't know that. So we're here on KCNR 1460 AM. You can reach us by phone, 530-605-4567, but you're probably having coffee and just listening. So join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Sick 'em on a chicken and watch them feathers fly. Sick 'em on a chicken. Sick 'em on a chicken. Break out the butter and the flour ready to fry. I said, y'all, but I've been living for. She said, I don't want to know.
Oh, you thought she was digging you, but she was taking me.
That old man, he gonna rate your record high.
That's right, maybe she got some curves, maybe I got
scary old man voice.
That's right.
Remembers the wolf
day you died.
Wolfman Jack.
Come on, who didn't have a transistor radio under their pillow?
God.
Hiding from their parents so they could listen to the Wolfman late at night. That was fun. It's part of being old like us. Other kids are like, what's a transistor radio?
What's hiding from your parents?
Yeah, really. That's true.
Listening to him on the Border Blasters.
That's an excellent point, Ted. Since you're old like us, you can come back in now.
Okay. Wasn't that Wolfman Jack?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. You think about Wolfman Jack and the, you know, the listening to the radio late at night when your folks wanted you to be in bed and you had your little radio under your pillow and, I don't know, they don't do that anymore. Bill's like, what's hiding from your parents? Getting away with murder, what the heck? Hey, so what have we missed? What did we skip while we were zooming all over the place and goofing around and stuff in your book? Because I gave your, I guess I should tell people, I gave all your books away that I had. I had five books. I took them to a wolf management meeting and gave them to the folks I listed off earlier, the people there representing wool growers, cattlemen, Farm Bureau.
It was like bringing the plague into
the room. But it was kind of funny because the houndsman guy had the book. I had given it to him already. The others were in my truck and I said, hey, Bill, hold that. Other Bill. Hey, Bill, hold that book up. I have five of these books, you know. And oh my gosh, it was like throwing holy water on the demonic forces of the underworld. These guys were like making noises and recoiling.
Their heads were spinning around.
You got some two thumbs down, Ted, from the environmental community. They were not happy. So they've all read your book, which was good.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, it's kind of awesome. The ag guys hadn't read it, but the environmentalists all have.
Well, I've changed quite a few minds with it. I mean, it's I think the last sentence in the book, which, you know, I write the book from the standpoint of like I would a trial. And I start out with an opening statement, and I have various different chapters devoted to dispelling these myths. And, you know, I have experts from various different fields write certain chapters, and then I write some. And the last sentence is, you know, the research in this book is irrefutable. And it is. There are over 460 references in the book. And, you know, they're all backed up. Most of them are either by interviews or peer-reviewed papers. I mean, what's so astonishing to me is that the facts that are put forth in this book have been around forever. I mean, it's not like, you know, anything that is new. The research on caribou herds disappearing in Canada comes from over 50 years of research by one of the authors of that chapter, Dr. Arthur Bergeron. The fact that wolves have killed people throughout history and continue to kill people is backed up by references in France and Russia and places all over the world, India, the Middle East. I mean, we had three attacks on people in North America last year. Thank God none of them resulted in anybody being killed, but there were three attacks. So, you know, the stuff that's been fed to people, the legislators and people like that they, you know, believe is that this was a good thing, and it's really not. So, and the book points it out.
Well, I think in the case of California, it's a little bit harder to, you know, turn the wheel at the state level. Just, you know, I mean, we weren't able to deal with the hound bill. That went, you know, that flamed out, and just, you know, we've had some things that have had a lot of facts, and the people promoting it have done a great job. And
well, it all comes back to that endangered species.
Kind of ended up nowhere.
An Endangered Species Act is killing us in California. We have everything from the red-legged toad to
red-legged frog.
Oh, red-legged frog.
And then you've got the coho salmon that you can buy in Costco. I love those.
I mean, the list goes on and on.
So, is there anything they could do at the county level? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I think, you know, it's education with your county commissioners. I mean, eventually, you know, people in politics, they have a lot of influence on our lives, and educating them is the most important thing you can do. You know, I think there are counties in Montana that passed ordinances and things of that nature that just defied what the federal government said. In fact, in terms of, you know, there were the governor of Idaho who wrote the prologue, and the governor of Montana, both of them said before wolves were finally delisted that they weren't going to allow their fish and game people to enforce any of the laws affecting people shooting wolves or hunting them when they were herding their livestock or anything like that. And they said, they told the federal government, if you want to do it, you just come in here. Of course, they don't have enough agents to do that, but they just defied the federal government, but in terms of their law enforcement, their local law enforcement people. And, so, you know, that's sort of what some of the counties did.
Well, I'm just curious because out of the 50, What do we have, 57 or 58? We have 58 counties in California.
Oh, I thought you were talking about states. I think it's 57.
I knew you were going to go there. no, I think that was 57 states. That's what always screws me up. But in California, this will primarily affect the four really at the on the north border with Oregon. So we're looking at Modoc County in the east. We're looking at Siskiyou and Shasta counties in the middle, and Del Norte County on the west side. I don't even know. I was talking to some people in Del Norte County, and this isn't even really on their radar. And at these fish and game meetings, when they throw up these geographic profiles for where they think they'll disperse, the greatest number dispersing is going to be in Del Norte County. They're not even planning for the southern end, by the way. There's nothing, obviously they got to go through us to get to the middle of the state, so they're kind of blowing that off. But they're concerned from New Mexico and Arizona and that area, and also from Mexico coming into Southern California.
Well, they just released four of these, what they call Mexican wolves, into Arizona just last week. Trying to expand that program out even further. Something that I think people don't understand is how much money the federal government has spent on this program. They have spent over $200 million trying to introduce these wolves into Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. $200 million. That's a lot of money for expansion of a species that's destroying thousands of elk and deer every year. In addition to that, they spent $26 million in New Mexico, and they have like 75 or 80 wolves there. That's several hundred thousand dollars per wolf.
Yeah, it's crazy to spend that kind of money on a animal.
That's right, there was stimulus.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I mean, they have all these, and in New Mexico, where they have, if you go back and look at the Mexican wolf that was there, it doesn't look anything like these wolves they've introduced there. And the wolves that they've introduced, I mean, I'm talking about, I have a photograph that Aldo Leopold, Starker Leopold, had killed a wolf in 1948 in New Mexico. It doesn't look anything like the wolves that they have there. And one of the people that were involved in that program was a man by the name of Roy McBride, who basically was a mountain man trapper, trapped seven of these Mexican wolves in Mexico, brought them back across the border, and they tried to interbreed those wolves, and they didn't work. So then the head of the program introduced another strain that had been mixed with dogs, and Mr. McBride was so upset about it that he eventually left the program. But I mean, they just do anything to perpetuate this myth.
Well, that's the thing, and folks are seeing up north, you know, up in Burt's area up there, they're seeing more of these wolves, and nobody's really talking about it because nobody wants the backdoor wolf management plan to come flying out of the closet. The one where
where are they seeing wolves?
I'm going to say in the center of California, up probably, I'd say an hour, if you were as the crow flies, hour or less from the Oregon border.
Mm-hmm.
However,
they're there.
Well, they did hear from my guy who didn't want his name given out, obviously, who works for one of the agencies, that the agencies are actually letting them out there. They're relocating them there. Although it's been said many times, they are definitely not, this is not a reintroduction of wolves. This is just a management plan just in case they show up there. But I'm willing to bet you money here and now that the minute they finish this management plan, they're going to show up. It's going to be like magic.
Oh, yeah. And I understand they are using stimulus money to reintroduce the wolves because they are shovel ready.
Wow, that's pretty good. You held on to that for like 10 minutes trying to work that in, didn't you? We're gonna slap Bill around here for a couple of minutes. Forget the advertisements. We're gonna just knock Bill around.
No.
and then we're gonna come back with Ted for the final throws of yet another program on wolves. And I know you think we're fixated, here on We the People Radio with Wolves, and we are. We're fixated because you need to be fixated.
Because they're going
to
be here first.
I'm still running into people who don't have a clue about this. It's like, it's kind of freaking me out. So, anyway, join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and if you've missed the show until now, go on there and listen to this after the fact. All right, Bob, push the button. Is that what you're doing? What are you doing? Okay. We'll be right back. Oh, leader of the pack. Perfect.
Who's that I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Ow! Listen to me!
Little Red Riding Hood.
I want you to know that your music guy there is really good.
You know, every topic we do is, okay, let's just say it's depressing, okay? The topics are depressing. So we try to fun them up a little bit.
A little levity in it.
Thanks, Bob. Nice musical choice there.
Well played.
Yeah, it was very well played. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, this stuff is something that, I mean, we need people to listen to this and get educated. We also need them to do, are you doing Morse code over there? Somebody Morse coding somewhere?
Hold on.
Are you being held?
It's just the NSA.
We just wanted to make sure you weren't being held captive. And we didn't know Morse code. That'd be bad. Okay, so courtesy of Bert Holthauser, who turned us on to this book, and obviously its author, Ted is going to be in Yreka. I realize that may not be next door to everybody. However, it's not till 7 o'clock, so lots of people can finish their work and head up. It's Thursday, April 24th at 7 p.m., Yreka Community Theater, 810 North Oregon Street in Yreka there. It's that far northern exit.
And that's a really nice theater, too.
It is. It's great.
Really,
it's good.
Really nice.
Cushy chairs. The audio is fantastic. We're going to do some recording, so we'll have a DVD of that after the fact. So if you live in far wherever, this will come up on YouTube, actually. And we'll probably just add it to this page after the fact, so you can go back to this page and check on it, and there will be additional information there.
Yeah, go there and get copies of the book and send them to all your friends in the big city and anybody you know that's in Sacramento.
Well, yeah, because we are not going to win this battle from out here in the middle of nowhere. They've already pretty much told us they kind of don't care what we think because we are a very, very small part of the puzzle. So we've got like 5 minutes, Ted. What would you like people to know? I mean, besides all the stuff we already talked about.
I think I go back to my belief. I'm an optimist, and I believe if you tell people the truth about this issue, then you will affect legislative change. And that's what the book was written for. And I think if people want to know the truth about how dangerous these wolves are and how devastating they are to our livestock and to our agricultural industries, that they'll get these books and get them to members of the legislature and get them to members of the policymaking bodies, the members of Congress, people like that, because they're the ones that finally make the decision. And, you know, once we were able to get that message up, it was rapidly, it changed the whole dynamics of what went on up there. Once the members of Congress and Senate found out the truth, then they were able to, you know, they were able to change the law.
They were able to work with it.
Yeah.
Well, you have lots of your, I think a lot of our ag representation, you know, cattlemen, farm bureau, wool growers, houndsmen, all these folks, I think a lot of times they feel like, oh, here comes another environmental regulation that's going to mow us down. But it's really incumbent upon you, if you're part of any of those groups, to reach out to your leadership and lobbying arms there and let them know that you have information and get this in their hands.
Don't say arms in Sacramento. Makes everybody itchy.
That's true. Shut up, shrimp boy. Ted, have you been following our legislative shenanigans of late?
Well, just a little bit. You know, it makes the front page of the New York Times. I read about it.
Yeah.
I think it did make some of your legislators get indicted out there, I think.
Oh yeah, Mr. Anti-Gunner, you know, he gets busted for arms trafficking.
Yeah,
which is just fun for everybody, especially when it's shoulder-fired rockets. I mean, it's not like he was pawning off his grandfather's handgun. we're fobbing off shoulder-fired rockets, so anyway.
I have to go, and
no
I want to thank y'all for having me on this morning. It's been really, really fun, and you tell your music guy again that he can go on the road with me anytime, play music for my speeches.
Well, we'll definitely pass that on, and we're really looking forward to seeing you
on the 24th.
Yeah, we'll pack the place for you.
I'm really looking forward to it. I think I'll have a good show for you.
Thanks a million, Ted. Yeah, we could tell you're moving around because we're losing your signal. All right.
Okay.
Thanks, Ted. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Ted Lyon, author of The Real Wolf.
That was the first. We had a guest leave 2 minutes early.
I know. Isn't that funny? Well, you could tell he was like, it was getting kind of beat up there. So
I'm hoping it didn't have anything to do with the shoulder-fired rocket comment you
it
made.
It could have been.
Maybe he is from Texas. You know, they're into self-defense.
He's like,
are you
bashing shoulder-fired rockets?
Yeah.
He actually lives near my brother's. So, no, anyway, I think it's really important to get factual information out to folks, and that's why the environmentalists hate this book. Lots of stuff written about wolves, but a lot of it is, it's emotional and it's editorialized. This is super, super detailed and factual. So get it in the hands of people who make decisions. Make sure that your Farm Bureau, cattlemen, all those people are standing on the right side of this. And they will do that on their own, but they'll do it better if you are pressuring them as their membership.
And do what you can to make it up there on the 24th and buy his book. And let's get those out there for everybody to read.
Zachary.
Once again, where is he going to be on the 24th?
He will be in Yreka, the town of Yreka, the Yreka Community Theater, 810 North Oregon. And the ad is right there, the little blurb about it, and a flyer you can print.
What time?
7 p.m. on the 24th of this month, April. So you can print that. Go online, wethepeopleradio.us. It's right there. Sue, I don't know what we're doing next week. I didn't write it down.
All right, stay tuned
we'll do
and find
fun.
Out. It's KCNR's Shasta Redding. Sovereign Minds is next.